Welcome to the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Joris Peels and Brent Wright, where we explore the latest developments and advancements in using 3D printing technology to create custom prostheses and orthoses, from in-depth interviews with leading industry experts, to case studies, to patient experiences. We delve into the exciting and innovative world of 3D printing and its role in the field of prosthetics and orthotics. Join us as we journey into the future of personalized healthcare with 3D printing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joris Peels, and welcome to the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. How are you doing, Brent?
Hey, Joris. I'm doing well. I'm in Chicago at Rapid TCT.
Okay. Lucky you. Lucky. I didn't get to go this year. I was a bit too swamped to go. So how is it?
Well, it's starting this morning. I actually hate that I'm missing seeing Kevin Zinger at the at the opening there. I always love it when he is speaking because they are doing some crazy stuff there at Divergent. Yeah, I've already got to meet some really great people. Mike Gorski, actually from Filament Innovations, told me to go by and meet the people at the Mitsubishi Chemical Group, which does a lot of the filament compounding and that sort of thing. And so I got to meet Al there, and that was really awesome as well.
Okay. And what are you looking forward to seeing? Is there anything you'd why are you there, actually? I mean, what's the main reason for you to be there? Just network? What?
Well, so it's actually a quick in and out. I am part of the advisory committee for the healthcare part. And I'm also speaking today about using your favorite topic, kidding, lattice structures and TPU for a guy that I made a prosthesis for that ran marathon. Richard, we had earlier on, really early on when we started the podcast. And so we're going to be talking about his journey and what we did to get him up and going. So I'm really excited about actually talking about that. And it seems like there's a lot of interest in the prosthetic and orthotic field among a bunch of companies. So we'll see where that goes.
Okay. I think it started to dawn on people. This could be a really exciting application for certain materials, for certain software, for end-to-end solutions. I think it really is starting to dawn on people. There's this whole world out there. And actually, I think a lot of people could in the 3D printing world are going to be quite surprised at how far along people are in orthotics and prosthetics, as in how far along individual practices are with their own 3D printing experiments. So that's going to be very interesting. I think you'll have a really great time.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. And I actually get to see Mike today as well from Film Innovations, and really appreciate Mike and Film Innovations and the team for sponsoring this episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast. Pellets are going to be the new thing, man. And maybe we'll talk to our next guest a little bit about what she's thinking about pellets. But it is really neat, some of the materials that are coming out for the pellet machines. And I think it's going to be a shortcut for creating a great prosthesis, multi-material as well. Mike has created the Ares printer, pellet printer, that just came to market, actually. Probably it's been about a month or so, but you save about 60% on material cost going pellets.
Yeah, definitely. I think pellets can be really exciting, so especially if we get more compounders to work on using twin screw setups to really engineer better pellets and compound better pellets to really get better performance, because that's not really happening, right? People are buying either off-the-shelf resin that's meant for all sorts of other different applications, while the film is quite highly optimized. So we want kind of something in between where the pellets are kind of optimized, but they really give you a lot of bang for a buck cost-wise. But I really think, we love Filament Innovations. We'd like to thank them very much for sponsoring us. I think the Ares sounds like a really super robust, super kind of very reliable, repeatable system that could be a really wonderful thing. And, could make, especially if you're printing really large parts, you're going to really feel that cost shift from filament to pellets.
Yes.
I think that's really exciting. One of the most exciting developments we're seeing at the moment. Who's on the show today, Brent?
Oh, this is going to be a great one. I really am excited to introduce Jen Rosati. She's the Clinical Operations and Research Manager at Kenny Orthopedics. What's neat about Jen is she got the digital stuff early on. She saw kind of what the future was going to look like with digital. And I was actually looking back through some of our correspondence really very early on, and she was an early adopter of scanning, carving, 3D printing, and they actually have a few Filament Innovations printers as well. So I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of her journey, not only into the field of orthotics and prosthetics, but the journey into digital. But then also she manages 19 clinics across the Midwest, and I believe actually in North Carolina as well. So hearing about that, and when you're dealing with 19 clinics, you also have a bunch of different personalities as far as clinicians and such, and people on different paths on the digital aspect. So it's going to be interesting to hear how that is managed as well.
Yeah, that sounds super exciting. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I think it's a great perspective, because we kind of always fall into this kind of trap of saying, okay, we've got the mom and pop single orthotist kind of setup, and we've got these giant kind of chains. And of course, there's businesses in the middle that are also regional or cross-regional, inter-regional. So I think it's going to be really exciting to get your perspective on kind of a little bit of a different feel for the market, I would feel. So Jen, tell us, how'd you get involved with OMP?
Yeah, this is always a fun story to tell. I'll tell the shortest version I can with still giving you a full story. So my mom, she budgeted for the state of New York, which is where I'm from. And she was in, part of what she did was through their Office of Disability Services. And so early on, we got involved as a family with a place called the Center for Disability Services in Albany, New York. And they were a wonderful organization that is very, very near and dear to my family. They provide comprehensive care to people with disabilities. It started off a long time ago as just cerebral palsy and grew to be, you know, everything you could imagine. And so, you know, they have speech and OT and PT. They've got group homes. They've got acute care centers. So they really do everything. And they're a huge, huge resource in our area that I think is pretty unique, it seems like. And so early on, we got involved with them as a family. My mom played a really large role in their annual telethon, which was always quite fun. And so my dad would bring my sister and I down to the telethon, and we were itty bitties. And I just loved it. I loved, you know, watching people, you know, with all sorts of disabilities move through the world. And that for me was actually how I started to get interested in mobility, basically. And so, it's always funny because it started really as orthotics. You know, people wore braces. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. You know, I love wheelchair mobility as well. But orthotics for me was really, really special. And I loved getting to know people and how, you know, how their orthotics were made and all that stuff. So as I got older, you know, I think Hugh Herr was on the cover of Time magazine. My dad says to me, well, you know, are prosthetics interesting to you? And I was like, yeah, they're really interesting to me. And you're like, huh, I wonder who does this stuff, right? That's always the question. And OMP, we're such a funny little field. And so it turns out that that all worked out perfectly, because OMP is made by the same person. So that worked out very well for me. So when I was in late middle school and early high school, I shadowed at an OMP clinic close to where I grew up, and they were wonderful to me and let me do all sorts of fun things and mess up a bunch of stuff for them. And I just really fell in love with the field of OMP and the patients that we got to treat. And so that's how I ended up in OMP. So it's been a long, long road. Went to college, knew I was going to grad school for P&O. So I was always the weird kid, you know, in middle school, who knew that I wanted to go make braces and prosthetic legs. So a little strange kid, but it led me to all of this. So I got my CPO and, you know, I got my master's degree, and then started working at Kenny, got my residency here in Indianapolis at Kenny Orthopedics. Thought, you know, we wouldn't stay long in Indianapolis. And it's been 6 years at Kenny Orthopedics, and it's been an awesome ride that landed with me doing clinical operations. So it's been quite fun.
So that's a really cool story. And so you've only ever worked at one company ever?
Only ever worked at Kinney Orthopedics. Yep.
Okay. So that does, I just need to know about this. Like, so how does this company get to be a regional player? How do they go from being a one shop to having like 17? And how does that work? Because I see the advantages, because like you can give people more development, they can move around, you could have more managerial stuff, the capital would be easier. But how did this come to be, let's say?
Yeah. So Kinney Orthopedics was started by Mo Kinney. And Mo is an amputee himself. He lost his leg when he was 7. And so I think, and this is me kind of telling Mo's story, which is always hard to tell someone else's story, but I think for Mo, the thing was, I think he had some pretty great care when he was a kid. And he, of course, grew up, knew he wanted to go into prosthetics and orthotics, and, you know, started his career, obviously not at his own company yet, and kind of realized he couldn't give the care that he wanted to be able to give and the care that he thought, you know, patients and families deserved. And so he went off in 2001 and started Kinney Orthopedics with one office in Lexington, and it grew quickly, but more slowly, of course, at the beginning, and slowly just grew organically. And the great part about us is, you know, our leadership and our partners are all people that Mo met very organically in life. And they all have great stories, which would take too long to tell you here, but they all have awesome stories of how they met Mo. And it's been amazing to kind of learn those funny stories. And so Mo slowly started gathering people that he just trusted and loved, like family, right? And it just started growing as he collected these leaders who, you know, wanted, who shared his vision, right? And so I always say Mo's first employee still works with us today. His first two actually still work with us today. And so, you know, I think Kinney Orthopedics in general, and I always say I have a great front row seat, but still sort of an outside perspective to the company in some ways. And I think when people ask, like, how did Kinney Orthopedics grow to be what it is? I think for me, I always say Mo is fearless. And I don't know that that's true or not true. And he'll never tell me, I'm sure. But Mo to me is fearless. And so I think as he, you know, he knew the care that he wanted to give, he hired people who agreed with that vision. And then you just have a bunch of pretty ambitious people out here all working towards the same mission, right? And so I think the way that we've really stayed at the forefront of sort of growth is providing that level of care, but also being early adopters. Not only, you know, 3D printing is an awesome example of a time that Mo gave the nod to move forward with something, and I'm sure we'll get there. But I think we've succeeded because Mo and leadership, they're early adopters of all things. And they continue to kind of push the envelope of what prosthetic care should be. And, you know, we fight back against some of these changing insurance rules, and, you know, we keep pressing forward with just providing care despite all of the obstacles that are in the way, because at the end of the day, Mo just wants to take care of amputees and the rest of us agree with that, right? So I think that's how we've grown. And I think as we've acquired, most of our offices were organic growth. They put them in areas that needed care, areas that would probably have satellite offices from other, you know, larger companies. And we put, you know, they decided to put offices in these more rural areas that needed access to great prosthetic care and had the patient population to support them, and staff them with 8:30 to 5 Monday through Friday staff. And that's something that I can definitely say I believe in very strongly, is having that kind of access to good care. So, you know, now we've acquired a few companies. And I think when we do those acquisitions, it's really cool to bring those business owners on, because they share they've all shared in that kind of vision of just wanting to provide exceptional patient care despite the obstacles to doing that right now.
Jen, I wanted to tell you my Mo story. everybody, you know, and I don't know that he would remember this. So it was actually before he started his own practice. Oh. I was a technician working in Charlotte, and he was visiting his friend who was managing the office that I was a technician at. And I remember I was had just pulled a KAFO, and I was bending the metal for the KFO, and that clinician was giving me a hard time about something not being aligned right. And he goes, "Hey, Mo, come over here and take a look at this. See what you think." and Mo goes, "Dude, man, that looks great. Why are you giving him a hard time?" And so that was my Mo interaction. I'll never forget that because the other thing that really stood out to me was the work that they did in Mexico. So, you know, him and some of his classmates, they still to this day go to Mexico to the same place and take care of patients. And that's my Mo story.
That's a perfect Mo story. That's Mo in a perfect nutshell. And yeah, Mexico is really important to Mo. He was just there, obviously, for ISPO, but then they were all there last week to do more of the clinic work. And so I always say, I think if we could get Mo on a plane like once or twice a week to go back down to Mexico, he would go as many times as he possibly could to go provide care down there. I think it's truly something that he really, really loves. So that's another just awesome Mo thing. You're right.
And so if we're talking about this chain of stores, right? Does this mean that, okay, so, you know, our narrative has been like the one shop clinic really cares. And you kind of alluded to this, you know, she'll stay past working hours and because it's her clinic, you know? Do you think you have like the healthy mix between saying, hey, we have more scale so we can specialize more, but at the same time, we still have that personal care? Is that the advantage for patients or?
Yeah, I think so. I've always felt like our advantage is exactly that. We have the freedom, and we're lucky because we do have leadership who gives us freedom to treat patients the way that we want to treat them. But we have the freedom to treat patients the way that we want to. The clinic managers have the freedom to run their clinics within, of course, a larger structure, but kind of the way that they want to. They get to make a lot of decisions that I don't, again, I've only worked here, so I never know, but that I don't know that everybody else gets, you know, the same level of freedom that all of our practice managers get. But then we have this amazing corporate structure that gives us resources like we were an enormous company, but we still have that small kind of personal or family feel. And I think we could have 50 or 100 offices, and I honestly think we would still make that happen just because that's what I think all of us really believe in. So yeah, I think we're just in that sweet spot where we came from nothing and one office and, you know, all of that stuff. And now we're growing and we're kind of sitting in this really cool spot right now. So I always say when I came on in 2017, we had 11 offices. And now there's 19 plus our corporate location that has our, you know, corporate staff and our central fabrication. And so, you know, just the growth in the last 6 years has been crazy. And I think it will just keep going because the mission is there, right? So as long as you're doing something right, as long as you know your why, you know, we're going to stay committed to that mission.
Okay. Right. And how do you guys, do you guys have your own centralized fab, right? Or
we do down in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It's housed at our corporate location. Our CFAB manager is Shane Pope, and he was actually a KO patient. And he was like, back in the day of we didn't really have central fab, we kind of did, kind of didn't. And Shane was like, I think I can make this better. And my favorite part about Shane is that he's a car guy. So he used to, I won't get the terms right, I am not a car person, but he used to, you know, fix up and do fancy car stuff. And so all of that care and detail that goes into making cars look pretty now goes into KO prosthetic sockets and orthotics. And we've definitely seen the change over the last, Shane's been here, I think, as long as I have, if not a little bit longer. So over that time period, really KO CFAP has become pretty awesome and turning out some incredible devices. And we've scaled from having a handful of employees down there to having, I think there's 25 total employees down at KO CFAP, and they're only fabricating stuff for our company right now. And they are busy. So it's very cool to see.
So, and when do you decide what to make in like a local office versus what to make at the CFAP?
We don't make very much in our local offices anymore. That was one of the changes with having Central Fab really ramp up and having Shane do what he did in terms of quality control down there, that most offices don't make their own final devices. So clinicians, of course, can have as much or as little control if they want. We've certainly seen offices who do pull, you know, AFOs and things like that when they need to, or when they really, really need to have complete control over something. A lot of them will, if they're doing something real tricky, they will come down to CFAB to work with, you know, CFAB on creating that device if it needs everybody's eyes on it. In the local offices, pretty much, if they're doing still any traditional fab, it's usually check sockets. So, but for the most part, everything has been centralized down in Nicholasville.
Okay, that's really interesting. But to me, like we've done a bunch of these episodes now, and we have these people that are very much people and love the whole interaction and stuff like that. And we have people that are much more kind of technically oriented. They love the hands-on working. Does that mean that if I'm like a really hands-on kind of prosthetist that yeah, I wouldn't be at home in your practice because it was like, I don't actually get to make anything? Are there frustrations around that or not really?
I don't think so. And the thing again with us is, and we do have those people who love that side of clinical care, and they're still always welcome and to do that, right? And that's that freedom to do things the way that the clinic managers or the practitioners want to do them. So they still have that freedom if they wanted to. I think we're finding, of course, as we grow, as more patients, you know, need to be seen, as, you know, we find ways either with digital design or, you know, other ways to sort of keep clinicians involved in that fabrication without maybe having them be the ones that are physically laminating or physically pulling a device. They're still doing modifications. They're still doing all the things that I think really matter, and that they want to be doing. But I think in a lot of cases, people have really found the benefit of having Central Fab, just from, like I said, just from that quality control standpoint. It, you know, it's like they're turning out beautiful devices, and none of us, I think, could complain that we aren't necessarily the ones physically doing that work just because of how super Central Fab is. But certainly for us, if somebody, you know, does want to laminate or pull something, they're not discouraged from doing that either, which is, like I said, is kind of one of the things I love most about us.
And it does having the Central Fab and really kind of saying, hey guys, the Central Fab is not just a resource, it's the resource. Does that mean your guys are much more open to 3D scanning because that's much easier, or has that not had that much influence?
Yeah, I think as we've grown, especially, right, you can't drive your mold as easily from Charlotte to Nicholasville, right? As same with Indy. So as 3D printing and scanning became more commonplace, we have some, and just like all technology, right? We've got some clinicians who jumped right on 3D scanning and primarily scan. They don't take too many casts. You know, they're doing very much a digital workflow. We still have some people who will not scan, don't want to scan, and that's okay. We certainly give them the tools and kind of try to talk about pros and cons and when scanning could be a tool in your toolbox, right? It's not like the be all end all, but You know, here are some cases in which, you know, we think we could really help your workflow, right? Everybody is slammed with paperwork and patients and all of that stuff. And so to me, scanning is one way that I think actually patients get better care from scanning. And I was obviously, like Brett said, super early adopter on that, on the scanning and printing bandwagon. And so I always have to remember that too when I'm talking to clinicians who think I'm crazier. But you know, certainly we give them those tools and those options to try to help, you know, provide exceptional patient care. And I do think that scanning is one of those. But yeah, certainly, and all of our printers are down at Central Fab. So people have over the last probably, I would say, 3 years, really gotten more used to scanning and seeing the positives of scanning rather than sending casts in boxes and things like that.
Okay. And how about 3D printing? What role has that played? Or what role does that play in you guys right now?
Yeah, 3D printing has been incredible. So we purchased our first 3D printer in August of 2020 from Filament Innovations and Mike Gorski. So works out perfectly for your podcast. But I had kind of helped to do the research on, okay, what printer are we going to buy, right? We all said, we need to do this. We want to get in on this 3D printing movement here, but what printer are we going to buy? What hardware are we going to buy to really turn out what we need to turn out, right? And so I did a bunch of research with a bunch of, you know, through a bunch of companies who have printers and things like that. And it was so obvious with Filament. It was probably one of the things I've been the most sure about. And when you're asking leadership to buy a 3D printer, it's you better be right? So it wasn't an easy thing to just purchase, right? It was still a big expense, right? So looked at a bunch of companies, and it was so obvious to me that Filament was the right choice. One, from the sheer size, right? That's important in prosthetics and orthotics. We have teeny tiny little things, and we have very, very large things. And all of them, I think there's a space, you know, for in 3D printing. And so print size, print speed, because some of them, you know, some of the printers, it's like, yes, it absolutely can print a socket, but it's going to take you 9 hours. And we were talking about it. We were like, man, we could turn out a check socket, right, in way less than 9 hours, even if you had to cast, pour, modify, you know, all of that stuff. That's way less than 9 hours. So we're like, all right, well, 9 hours doesn't work. So that's out. And so Filament's printers, the Icarus printer at the time, checked all of those boxes. And then Mike, just for us, again, we're not a huge company. We're not a small company. And so whenever we do things like this, I think for me, I always look at who's going to be a great partner for us, because we do need help. We don't have a massive, massive staff, right? So we know that we're going to need help with implementation of these things. And so Mike was just the perfect partner. And I asked him, you know, a million questions. And we went to Pennsylvania with a few people on our team who, you know, were part of this 3D printing purchase and to learn how to use the printer. And he was just one of those people where you're like, man, we're going to buy this printer, and then he's going to help us to make sure that it doesn't just sit and collect dust, or make sure that we don't struggle for too long with any part of utilizing this printer. And that has been 100% true. It is still true to this day. If we have a problem, or if we're trying to figure something new out, or if we want to use, you know, one of the new materials from Mitsubishi, who has also been a stellar partner for Filament and for us, you know, to get print settings correct and all of that stuff. And Mike has just been absolutely phenomenal. So it is a purchase that I definitely have never regretted recommending. And that's a great feeling. So we're really thankful for that.
And what really made the business case for you guys? Like internally, okay, you got to buy a printer. You're sold on filament innovation. Wonderful. You got a really nice, warm feeling. But, you know, what made it sense? What would it, like, financially, it's got to add up too, right?
Yeah. This is actually, and again, this was a great thing. And this is why, this is another reason that I love, you know, the size that we're at, because they were like, okay, you want this printer. A bunch of us wanted this printer, right? Everybody thought it was the right idea. But so they're like, so we just made a pure ROI on this thing. And it was, I mean, basically it paid for in the number of, and at the time, all I said was, if we just printed check sockets, we would be in a better place, right? We are scanning and we are sending off to another manufacturer who carved and then pulled the socket the old fashioned way. And for me, I'm always like, whoa, what's the extra step there? It's the carving, right? You don't need to carve if you can print. And then why would we send off if we can keep that in house? And so we could eliminate one, using an outside manufacturer, and two, that step of carving, that's a very real step, right? And so for us, from a business perspective, it was an absolute no-brainer when you really just did a pure ROI on the printer. And basically we found that with the number of check sockets that we do in a year and the cost of the printer, and compared to the costs and the materials and the costs of plastic and plaster and shipping and all of that stuff that you don't have with a digital workflow, the ROI on the original printer was like 3 months. And we were like, I mean, I've never seen a no-brainer like that, you know, in my life. So I was like, it really was, from a business perspective, you were like, we can get things to patients quicker. It made it so that, you know, for me in my office, when I was, you know, I was still practicing, obviously, at that time, this was before clinical operations for me. And so I started to be able, and the office that I was in was growing like wildfire, which was another just incredible thing to be a part of. And, but it was one of those things that you were like, oh gosh, we have so many more patients than we had. How do we still provide exceptional care, right? And that's always where we go back to. How do you provide exceptional care? Well, if I could scan and print, and then I just had to have my check socket shipped from Nicholasville to Indy, which is a one-day ship with UPS, I can start scheduling my patients more effectively, right? So I would scan them. I would modify. I took 5 minutes instead of the 30 minutes that it would take me to modify, you know, a plaster mold. And that's not counting the time that it took to pour it up or pull the actual check socket, right, that a technician is doing. So you're taking their time as well. And so it could modify in 5 minutes, send it off. CFAB would print it. They'd ship it up to me. So on the way out the door, I said to the patient, okay, do you want to come back in 2 days, right? And we didn't do that with plaster molds because we had to make sure that everybody had time, right? We had to have time to pour it up. We had to have time to let it sit. We had to have time that I could then go back and modify it. Then we had to have time that they could make it all pretty and pour it and then pull it and cut it off, right? Put it on a plate. All this stuff that you're just like, you just don't even think about the time. And so we used to schedule patients back in a week, you know, and now I could do that in 2 days. And so people started getting their prosthetics faster. And that is really, for us, like when we talk to clinicians who are maybe a little bit hesitant about adopting this digital workflow, it's like, it was never just a business move. And there's very few things I think that we do just because they're good for business. It was the best thing for patient care, and it still holds true. And I think those who have adopted it as a kind of common procedure in their offices, they feel that way too.
Yeah, I think it's a great point to give that flexibility and that speed. Also, you know, if you're just looking at this financially, it means you close business faster, your profit velocity increases and stuff like that, but also your customer satisfaction goes up because you can just get people the help they need quicker than they previously were able to.
Absolutely.
But and you know, okay, so you started with check sockets. Are you still using it, you know, just primarily for check sockets or only for check sockets, or are you doing other stuff as well?
We are still primarily using them for check sockets. Some people have ventured into printing other things. Central Fabrication is definitely experimenting with other things. We've done some flexible inners, especially for upper limb on them, and some, you know, carbon fiber nylon sockets for different applications as well. But, you know, for us, like I said too, you know, and you alluded to earlier, getting everybody on board just to do their check sockets has been a really, actually, I've enjoyed it at times. For me, sometimes things that move slowly are a little bit frustrating for me. And my coworkers will laugh when they hear that statement because they know that that's totally true. But it's been a little bit slow to get everybody on the check socket bandwagon. So, but those who got on that one early, they're starting to do other things. We have some clinicians who are extremely interested in 3D printing that have helped along with our Central Fabrication, who's running the printers. You know, they've started to push forward with, okay, we've got this down, right? What else can we do? So we've printed some upper limb pieces to be used on definitive patient devices. We've printed some kind of post-op protector type things. And we're really starting to now enter into the world of, okay, like what else can we print? Things as simple as foot orthotics, which make people laugh. But you know, patients need foot orthotics. And so, things like foot orthotics, things like, prep sockets, and moving into figuring out how or if we want to print definitive sockets as well. So.
And what's the hold up there? I mean, we haven't talked about this before, but like, you know, what are you personally, is it a materials question? Is it a design thing? Is it just a confidence thing where people, like, we kind of get this impression that people are like, yeah, I need some more time before I trust it with this, you know?
Yes. I think that's what it really boils down to from, if you kind of surveyed the whole company on, hey, why are you nervous about this, right? And it just comes down to, and again, it goes back to providing exceptional care, right? It goes back to knowing that when somebody walks out of your office, that they're safe. And so as we're testing this out and more people are doing it in the company and we're seeing the positive effects, I think it's helping some people to feel more confident in maybe giving it a go.
Yeah. And so you're actually a clinical operations and resource manager. What does that actually mean? What do you actually do?
That's a really valid question. It's a great job. So I've had a lot of fun. Basically, what I think it boils down to is advising offices on best practices for how their offices operate and take care of patients. Some of them need more help than others. Some of them want more help than others. Of course, it's compliance with ABC and Medicare and all of that stuff as well to make sure that we're always operating in a way that meets those requirements. But at the end of the day, the thing that I loved the most about clinical practice was figuring out these workflows and was figuring out how to take care of patients better and more efficiently to get them what they needed sooner. And so that's really what this role has turned into, is helping offices to do that and giving them the information and sort of the power, you know, the data to say, like, here's where we can improve. This role for our company has changed a lot over a very, very short period of time. And it started with not having a CPO in this position. And, you know, now we have me, obviously, who's a CPO in the position. And it really has changed, I think, what operations means to all of us as a company, because it sort of used to be that catch-all role, right? It was kind of compliance. It was office maintenance type stuff. It was all of these different avenues of running a company, right? And And what's been cool and what I'm always really thankful for is sort of being able to work to define this role. And so I've only been in the role since November of 2021. We've had a lot of changes as a company in that time, and a lot of changes, you know, for me in terms of what really we're finding to be the value of clinical ops and resources. And so, you know, anything really that touches our patients, that any resources that we provide to our patients, all of that stuff kind of is something that I get to help the offices, you know, to figure out what makes sense. One, for us as a whole company, right? 19 offices, it's always hard to find standards across 19 very, very different offices and very different regions with very different management staff. But we found so many ways that we can kind of standardize different things that we're doing, standardize different processes. And that also helps, right, as you scale up to being an even bigger company, not taking individualization out of patient care or out of anything, but just sort of having these very kind of foundation or building block standards to help people to take care of patients the right way.
When you're talking about your role and as a CPO and how that is different than a lot of other companies that have, say, a technology role and they're pushing stuff out to CPOs, but they're not a clinician, can you just let our listeners know, like, why is that important? And then two is, what are the lenses? We have a lot of vendors that listen to our podcast as well because they want to know how to sell to our field. Yeah. And so what are some of the lenses that you as a CPO and kind of this director of some of the technology and such, what are you looking at? And then why is that clinical perspective so important?
Yeah. I think it's really easy to tell offices in general, and especially with technology, to do something, right? You're like, yes, if you were not a clinician and you saw 3D printing and you saw the ROI on 3D printing, you would be like, why are we not doing this, right? And I think in a different structure, it could easily be something that was pushed so hard on people without really giving them a chance to adopt it themselves, right? You could make it a company standard and say, you have to 3D print your tech sockets, right? And from a business standpoint, that makes complete sense, to be honest, right? I don't think anybody at this point could argue that point successfully against that idea, right? But from a clinical perspective, it goes back to that, you know, what you guys mentioned earlier, which is, are you taking the part of clinical care that some people just love out of their hands by doing that, right? If you got into P&O because you loved plaster, right? Because you were that artsy type that loved the molding, casting and plaster. And I come in and I say, as somebody who's not a clinician, I don't think you'd understand that part, right? And so for me personally, I actually do love the messy part. I love art and crafting and all of that stuff, right? So for me, I do enjoy the messy part, but the efficiency and patient care part for me personally, you know, superseded that. And I always say, like, I could go mix up some plaster and just get messy if I wanted to for fun someday, but I don't have to make it part of my clinical care anymore. But I think if you're not a CPO, I think it's hard to understand, like, how people feel, like, sort of that sentimental side, right, of us, or that very hands-on side that's like, man, I got into this field because that's what I love, and you're taking that away from me. So we look through all of those lenses, and for me, it's been different to be in clinical ops rather than just a gung-ho clinician who thinks everybody should scan and print, for that reason, because you sort of get to understand, like, where people are coming from. And I think if you're not a clinician, I think it's really hard to understand, especially if you are a tech person, right? If you are a vendor, if you're Mike Gorski, right, making 3D printers, you're like, who would want to pour plaster? And then you talk to some of these clinicians, and it's not our oldest clinicians. It's not the people who have been in the game the longest. It actually it transcends multiple generations, right? So I've got very young clinicians who do not want to 3D print, and I didn't ever expect that. And I've got some older clinicians who I honestly, before I started doing clinical ops for the company, I was like, that person's probably never going to scan. And I was wrong. One of our oldest clinicians is actually someone who jumped on very early because of the efficiency side of, and the patient care side of 3D printing and scanning. And so I think that's really important to look at. And I think it's important for vendors and, other partners in our industry to know that it's not ever that people don't want to provide good care, right? Or we don't want to do things quickly, or we, you know, all that stuff. It's just that it's why some people got into the field is just really different, right? You used to get your CPO, you used to have to go down and take an exam where you've been to CAFO. Like you were saying, right? You've been to CAFO to pass your exams. And I'm sitting here like, if I had been to CAFO to pass my exams, we might be in a different place, right? So it's just a changing field. And I think it's important that when we're bringing this technology to companies that we remember that we have all types, you know, of clinicians and all types of.
Okay. And do you have any best practices? Like, because at one point, okay, it's nice to go at people's pace, but at one point you believe in, for example, 3D printing, you want to convince people, you know, do you have to wait and see, or are there things you can do to make them more familiar or give them more information without being too pushy? Because like, I think it's a great role, but it could be like a kind of coach role, or it could be like a cop, or you could be not getting anywhere because you're just too careful. And just at the end of the day, everyone is going to do their own thing. And then you don't have any kind of standards or any kind of quality, right?
100%. Absolutely. And for me, that's something that, I take advice from a few other people on things like this, because like you said, to me, I would be the one that's like, this is the standard, like, let's do it. Because from a black and white perspective, this is so clear, right, that it's a good thing. But sometimes it makes more sense to let things play out a little bit more slowly for us. And I found, and I'm thankful for this lesson. I found that sometimes if you let people get there on their own, you end up just with people who want to be doing it instead of people who are doing it because, quote, corporate told them to, right? Which is never makes any worker in any industry happy. But you're right. There are things that we've done to try to encourage people. We have tons of, different resources. We do some virtual lunch and learn type things. We, take the people who have been scanning and printing, and we put them in front of all of our clinicians for them to say, this is the positive effects on my office, right? So Jen saying that 900 times is less effective than some of our other, practice managers or other leaders saying that information to people who may be hesitant to adopt it. So I do think you're right that there's a coaching aspect to it. It's also putting the right people in the right seats, right? It's empowering people to do things the way that they want to do. So we have a few different types of scanners in the company, and I have my favorites, and other people have their favorites. And at one point, I really thought we all needed to be using the same scanner because it just makes sense to me, right? Right. And so that coaching aspect is really important, but also showing people the clinics who are extremely busy, who are seeing an extremely high claim volume and are able to do it with, to be honest, like less staff because they are adopting some of these best practices or some of these most efficient practices, not just 3D printing and scanning, but things all the way from front office to lab to, just to patient care. I think people start to be like, all right, well, if they're doing this, surely I can. So Lexington is still our largest office, and they are printing most of their check sockets. And it was really cool at our last, we just had a meeting that had all the practice managers down in Nicholasville, Kentucky, which was really, really fun. And it's been different in all of those offices with all of those clinicians. So I think it's just important to kind of move a little bit slowly and cautiously while still definitely advocating for the fact that this is a great way to take care of patients, with, with digital workflows.
Okay, Jen, this sounds like a super sensible approach. Super great. And thank you so much for sharing your experience, your knowledge with us, and a really wonderful episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Brent, it was wonderful having you here as well today.
Oh, this is great. And yeah, thank you, Jen, for adopting this technology and then also being a leader in helping others adopt it well. And I love seeing what you guys are doing. And I think that's really neat.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. This was the Prosthetics and Orthotics podcast with Brent Wright and Joris Peels, and of course, Jen Rosati today. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day. And remember, today was brought to us by Filament Innovations. And that's a really solid 3D printer, material extrusion printer for making check sockets at high volume, really solid device. And you should head over to them and check them out and say hi so that Joris and Brent sent you. Have a great day.